In for a Peso, In for a Pound by Sue N. Chapter 2. Read by Cookie Mom 6067. Chris and Nathan entered the saloon, joining the men already there. Buck, J.D., and Josiah were seated at the peacekeeper's customary table, while Ezra Standish was at his usual table, engaging a recently arrived salesman and two men who looked to be cowhands in a game of poker. Standish noted the gunfighter and healer's arrival without ever lifting his eyes from his cards. "And how fares our injured comrade?" he asked, appraising with apparent indifference what he felt certain was yet another winning hand. "I understand I missed a most amusing confrontation between Mr. Tanner and his ill-tempered equine. I pray the beast did not savage him too severely." "Ain't nothing broke," Nathan reported as he and Chris seated themselves at the table with the other three men. "Got a concussion, a couple of ribs cracked, and he twisted that left knee pretty good, but the rest is just bruises. Deep bruises, though he's going to be mighty sore for some time." He threw a warning stare at Chris. "I don't want him riding no patrols for at least a week. I want to be sure he ain't busted up inside." "Don't worry," Chris said evenly. "I ain't sending him out. He can just stay around town and take it easy." "What a lovely prospect," Ezra drawled wryly, laying down his cards and raking in the small pot. "Mr. Tanner, imprisoned within the confines of civilization against his will." He shuddered at the thought, then gazed pleadingly at the three men sharing his table. "Might I implore one of you gentlemen to shoot me now so that I may avoid the incipient misery?" "Ain't nobody shooting nobody," Chris growled. "We're all in this together, and I'll look real close at any sudden pressing needs to leave town. I ain't corralling Tanner on my own." Grim chuckles met his words, as every man there knew Chris had a cause for his concern. Vin was a difficult man to keep down. More than once he dragged himself out of bed when sick or injured and pronounced himself fine when he could barely stand, so not one of them doubted that, in his stubborn mind, being able to walk, however much pain it caused him, meant there was no reason in the world he could not do whatever the hell he wanted, whenever the hell he wanted to do it. "Might as well get over here, Ezra," Larrabee ordered grimly. "We got to figure out how we're going to track them horse thieves without our tracker." Standish rose to his feet with a rueful smile. "My apologies, gentlemen. While I would much rather stay and pursue my aunt, I feel duty calls." He arched a chestnut brow hopefully. "Perhaps later this evening?" The two cowhands exchanged interested glances, and the smaller of the two smiled slightly. "I reckon we'll still be around." Ezra smiled until his gold tooth gleamed. "I am delighted to hear it." And he was. For all their trail-worn appearance, the two had a surprising amount of money and precious little skill at cards. The combination in the gambler's eyes was heaven-sent. Josiah and J.D. made room for Ezra while Chris stared down at the table. "Ain't going to be easy without Vin," he said. "Them wrestlers ain't leaving much of a trail as it is. Without his eyes..." "I'm sorry," Nathan put in firmly, "but we're just going to have to make do. He ain't no shape to ride. Hell, Chris, you saw him." "Yeah," Larrabee sighed, grimacing at the memory. "I saw." He raised his gaze to the healer. "But you know Vin ain't going to like it. It's going to be hard keeping him in town when he knows we need him. And being hurt ain't going to make him any easier to get along with either." "Oh, yeah," Buck breathed. "It's going to be a fun week." He quickly downed a shot of whiskey. "Well," J.D. put in, having some consolation to offer, "at least we know he won't try to go anywhere tonight or tomorrow. He might not think he's hurt, but he knows Peso is, and Vin wouldn't dream of taking him out with a bum leg." Chris sat back and stared at the boy. "How bad's Peso hurt?" Out of sheer self-preservation, he hoped it was a lot worse than it had appeared in the street. J.D. was right. Vin would put himself through any abuse he thought necessary, but he'd never willingly harm that goddamn cougar of a horse. J.D. frowned and thought, "Well, it looks worse than it is." He looked up in shock and disapproval at the groans that greeted his words. "Hey," he yelped, "this is Vin's horse." "Exactly, son," Josiah said quietly. "This is Vin's horse we're talking about, and if Peso's not hurt bad, there won't be any excuse for Vin not to ride him. He looked at Nathan and grinned mischievously. Don't suppose you could keep him dosed with laudanum for a week? Which one? Nathan snorted. Vin or that horse? Maybe both, the preacher chuckled. Give us and our horses a few days' peace and quiet. Peso ain't that bad, J.D. defended the horse, while still skirting over the issue of the tracker. You just gotta know how to handle him. Yeah, I figure a pitchfork and a whip are the best ways, Buck said. Hell, I've known rabid wolves with sweeter tempers than that damn fool animal. Best be careful, Buck, J.D. warned with a smirk, picking up his beer. If Vin hears you talking that way about Peso, he'll likely to skin you alive. Hell, boy, Vin can't hear me, the big man said confidently, pouring himself another shot of whiskey. He's being fussed over by Miss Nettie, and you know how serious she takes her fussing, especially when her boy is sick or hurt. I don't reckon we'll see old Vin for another couple of hours yet. You willing to stake your life on it, Buckland? Jesus, the big man shouted, jumping to his feet and spilling his whiskey. Spinning around, he stared into the bruised, grim face of Vin Tanner. God damn it, Vin, he spat harshly, his heart racing wildly. How many times I got to tell you not to sneak up on me like that? You could give a man a heart attack. Vin glared up at him, completely unrepentant. Serves you right, he said coldly. You's talking about Peso again. You don't never hear me running down your horse. That's because my horse ain't no goddamn man-eater, Buck argued. Sides, he crossed his arms against his broad chest and arched two dark brows at the smaller man. I seem to recall you talking to Blue Streak about him in the street earlier, and they weren't exactly sweet words of love. Tanner scowled up at the big man. That's between him and me. After all he'd done to me, I reckon he had it coming. But he ain't done nothing to you, so you's best lay off him, you hear? Buck raised his hand slowly, hearing both the anger and the pain in the gravelly voice, and seeing more than a trace of discomfort in the usually stoic face. Tanner was normally an amiable and even-tempered as they came, but when in pain he could be surlier than a sore-footed grizzly, and he was defending his horse to boot. Wilmington hadn't lived this long by being stupid. "I hear you, Vin," he said, offering one of his broad, easy smiles. "Now why don't you sit down, have a drink, and get off that bad leg before Nathan here has a fit?" Tanner glanced at the healer and saw the familiar, too familiar glint in the man's dark eyes and the tightening of his mouth. "I ain't done nothing except walk from Miss Potter's to here," he defended himself. "Don't need to be walking at all," Nathan scolded, glaring up at him. "I told you to stay off of that leg." "How am I supposed to get around?" "You don't need to be getting around," Nathan shouted, infuriated by the man's stubbornness. "Hell, Vin, you ought to be in bed, resting all them hurts." "Ain't hurt," Tanner insisted, causing Larrabee to roll his eyes in disgust. "Just bruised up a mite is all." He limped slowly around to the empty chair at Chris's left, causing more than one of his friends to wince in sympathy at the painful stiffness of his movements. He lowered himself carefully into the chair and sat back, groaning involuntarily as his hurting body adjusted itself to this new position. "Yeah, you ain't hurt," Chris scoffed, pouring his friend a drink and pushing it to him. Vin reached for the shot glass, then swore foully as a black hand snatched it from him. "God damn it, Nathan!" "I told you, Vin," Jackson said grimly. "You got a concussion. Don't need to be drinking no liquor with the head injury." He turned and glared at Chris. "And you should know better than to give it to him." Chris grinned slightly and shrugged. Figured if we were lucky he might pass out. "Go to hell," Vin growled, shooting Larrabee a nasty glare. He then turned to J.D. "Get me a beer, would you, kid, since I ain't supposed to walk and all?" J.D. licked his lips nervously and stared from the unhappy tracker to the even unhappier healer and back again. Vin, I don't think I said no liquor. Beer ain't liquor, it's beer, Vin snapped at Nathan, irritated as ever by the unwanted coddling. Now, goddammit, J.D., he drew his mirror's leg and slapped it onto the table, well within easy reach. I said go get me a beer. "Yeah, sure, Vin," the boy agreed at once, rising quickly to his feet. "Whatever you say." He hurried to the bar, content to let Vin and Nathan fight it out amongst themselves. Both had guns, both had knives, and both were deadly with either. He'd be happy to go to the bar. "Put it away, Vin," Chris said quietly. He knew Tanner wouldn't use the sod off against them, knew it was just a warning that the tracker had decided he'd been pushed and pulled enough for one day. Nathan, leave him be. A man's got a right to settle his nerves after a trying day. Nathan relented, though not happily. Still, he took some reassurance from the fact that Vin was not a big drinker, and likely did just want something to take the edge off of his various hurts. And no doubt the man had survived worse than a beer or two on top of a concussion. "Here you go, Vin," J.D. said, returning a few moments later and settling a glass of beer down before his friend. "Thanks, kid," Vin rasped, glancing up and smiling crookedly. "Sorry for snapping." J.D. grinned and dropped into his chair. "Don't worry about it. Hell, I guess you've had a pretty rough couple of days." Chris watched Tanner raise the beer and drink deeply from it. "Buck was right about one thing," he said. "I figured Nettie'd still be clucking over you." He raised a blonde brow. "I hope you ain't thinking of hiding from her in here, 'cause I ain't about to get between you and her." Vin set the beer down and wiped his mouth with the back of his hand, then flicked a blue gaze over the gunslinger. "Now for record, you for the type to run from an old woman," he drawled insolently, one of the few men alive who could tease Chris Larrabee and not get shot for it. Chris grinned easily. "Nettie Wells ain't just any old woman, Tanner, and you know it." The grin widened and green eyes glinted maliciously. "I seem to recall her threatening you with a strap and a bar of soap, and you backing down like she was armed for bear. Now why ain't you letting her fuss over you?" Finn ducked his head and scowled. "She's the one run me out of Miss Potter's door," he admitted softly. "She's still getting supplies, and when I offered help, she likely to scoured my hide with that tongue of hers. Then Miss Potter started in, and Miss Hanlon was there, too." "Shit," he rasped, throwing a glare at Nathan. "Now you see why I wanted that drink? Spent 10 minutes getting looked over and jabbered at by three women. Hell, if I thought y'all wouldn't have shot me, I'd have lit out for the hills." Nathan laughed aloud in delight at the thought of the fierce Nettie Wells, the doting Gloria Potter, and the motherly Eliza Hanlon, a woman with 6 or 7 children of her own, but who has never missed the chance to cluck over one more, all driving the shy tracker to distraction with their fussing over him. So vivid was the picture, and so clearly could he imagine Vin's panic, that he did not raise a single objection as Chris slid his friend another shot of whiskey. "Speaking of hills," Larrabee said, knowing how raw Tanner's nerves were and not wanting the teasing of him to get too dangerously out of hand, "tell us what you found in Cutter's Pass." Vin downed his whiskey in a swallow and grimaced as it burned its way down. "Fair amount of sign," he answered hoarsely. "They's definitely moving stock through there. Wanted to see where the trail led, but," he winced at the memory, "I reckon I got distracted." Chris gave a warning frown, wanting no more discussion of how Tanner had gotten distracted. "J.D., you find anything?" J.D. sighed and leaned forward, folding his arms on the table. "Not much. I did see some sign of horses out around Blanco Canyon." "Hell, son," Buck snorted, "of course you did. That's Mustang country. Them ponies breed like jackrabbits over there." "Shit," he laughed. "You'd have to be blind not to see horse sign around there." J.D. rolled his eyes in disgust at the big man. "But since when did Mustangs start wearing shoes, huh? Geez, Buck, give me some credit. I know the difference between shod and unshod tracks." Vin smiled slightly at the boy and raised his glass in silent salute, and J.D. beamed at the tracker's gesture. Chris scowled and rubbed his lower lip with a thumbnail. Cutter's Pass and Blanco Canyon were in opposite directions from each other, and every man at that table knew it. Yet both showed signs of horses having been moved through them, and both offered good routes to Mexico. He breathed a curse. Goddamn thieves weren't going to make this easy. "So where's that leave us?" Vin frowned thoughtfully. "Can't really say. If they ain't taking them the same way every time." He shrugged. "I reckon I could ride for Purgatory in the morning. I reckon about the only place these fellers could take so many stolen horses is Mexico. Could be somebody down there knows something." "You ain't going nowhere tomorrow," Chris said flatly. "Peso can't be ridden for another couple of days, and Nathan says you're not to ride for at least a week. If anybody goes to Purgatory, it'll be one of us." "A week?" Ben protested sharply, anger coursing through him at this latest indignity. "Hell, Chris, there ain't nothing wrong with me." "You can barely walk." "Wasn't planning on walking." "A week, Vin," Larrabee said in a hard, cold voice, his gaze catching and holding his friend's. "You got shot in the head, thrown into a ravine full of rocks, remember? Nathan wants to be sure you ain't busted up inside, and the last thing you need right now is to be jostled around by that hellcat you call a horse." "Hell," he swept his glare over Tanner's battered figure. "I doubt you could even get on Peso right now." "God damn it, Larrabee." "A week, Vin." He stared into the blazing blue eyes. "I see you on a horse before then. I'll shoot your ass out of the saddle and lock you in a cell. You hear me?" Vin slammed his empty shot glass against the table and rose abruptly to his feet. "You could try," he snarled. Without another word, he turned and limped stiffly away from the table and out of the saloon, shoving his way furiously through the batwing doors. "My, my," Ezra quipped lightly, pouring himself a drink. "I am positively overwhelmed by so moving a display of fraternal affection. How can I ever thank you, gentlemen, for allowing me to be a party to such splendid baldomie?" Ben saw Nettie's wagon still parked outside Mrs. Potter's store and knew he'd only get another lecture if he walked in and she smelled whiskey on him. Not at all in the mood for that, he turned and limped down the boardwalk, already feeling hemmed in. No matter how he tried to avoid it, he encountered someone he knew, and had to endure still more expressions of concern over his battered appearance. Soon his nerves were stretched taut as rawhide, and the familiar feeling of unbearable pressure was building in his chest, interfering with his ability to breathe. Every wall of every building pressed much too closely against him, and not even stepping out into the street helped. Lord God, didn't folks have nothing better to do than stare a feller to death? Instinctively, hardly realizing he was doing it, he headed for the livery, plagued by a worsening headache and feeling every step deep in his knee and hip. At last, breathing hard from the pain and the sheer closeness of the town, he slipped into the livery, seeking the one soul who understood, who shared his hatred of any kind of restraint. Peso. The big gelding was in his stall, happily munching away at his feet and gleaming like polished silk from J.D.'s grooming. He raised his head and shook at Vin's approach, then returned to his eating. Vin opened the stall door and limped inside, sliding a hand and carefully assessing eyes along the horse's flank. As ever, he was pleased with J.D.'s work, and grateful to him for taking such good care of Peso. "Ain't sure you're worth it," he drawled softly, patting a powerful shoulder and smiling as the cantankerous animal swung his head around and nudged him hard in his shoulder. "Lucky for you, though," he said, scratching behind one black ear. "J.D. thinks you are." He glimpsed the white bandage wrapped around Peso's right foreleg, then squatted slowly, painfully, to get a closer look. Had it been anyone else's work, he would have unfastened the bandage and made sure the wound had been thoroughly cleaned and doctored. Since J.D. had done it, however, the thought never crossed his mind. "Hope you was properly grateful for this," he said, scowling up at the unconcerned horse. "Hope you minded what passes for manners, too, and didn't try to bite him none." Reaching out to steady himself against Peso, he struggled to rise, unable to suppress a sharp, hissing breath as pain shot through his left leg, hip, and side. He leaned against his horse for long moments, burying his face in that satiny neck and biting back any sound of pain, trying to find some way to stand that did not hurt. There was none. With the patience that would have startled countless others, Peso endured the weight of the man leaning against him, stood calmly, quietly, and lent his solid support, as if it were an everyday occurrence. He seemed to sense that Vin was in no mood or condition to fight with him, seemed to realize the man needed his strength now instead of his spirit, and, as ever, gave what was needed of him. Though few would have believed it possible, Peso acted like a decent horse and let pass the perfect chance to stomp someone to bits. "Goddamn mule," Vin breathed with rough affection, slowly pushing himself from the horse. "Next time, give me some warning before you fling me down a mountain. I surely would have appreciated a chance to miss bouncing off some of them rocks." Peso nickered softly, and Vin chuckled. "Yeah, I reckon you didn't have much warning either, did you? Still," he threw a mock glare at the horse, who shook his head and ignored it. "You're supposed to be steadier than that, you being half-mountain goat and all. You don't start doing better, we're going to have us some words. You can be replaced, you know." If Peso was bothered by the threat, one he heard almost daily, he gave no sign of it, but simply went back to his feed. Now and then a black ear twitched to show that he was aware of Tanner's presence, but he was otherwise wholly unconcerned and utterly unimpressed. Finn scowled at his inattentive horse. "That's right, ignore me," he scolded. He narrowed his eyes, thrust his thumbs into his gun belt, and leaned on his right hip, taking his weight off his left. "Just trying to warn you what can happen if you don't mend your ways. But you ain't even got the sense to listen. Got an almighty high idea of yourself, don't you?" He nodded firmly. "All right, then. Just don't look too surprised when someday I trade you in for a mule, and you end up being a pot of glue, or a bunch of jerk meat drying on a rack somewheres." "You through showing him who's boss yet?" asked a low, amused voice from the doorway. Finn immediately reached for his gun, then calmed himself and released it. Scowling more deeply still, he limped out of the stall and watched the lean, black-clad figure approaching. "Good way to get yourself shot, cowboy," he growled, angry at himself for not having heard the man's entrance. Larrabee smiled slightly, realizing he had actually managed to startle his friend. "Must have hurt your head worse than you thought," he said, noting the tracker's unamused expression. "Usually you can hear a fly buzzing in the next county." He stopped about a foot from Tanner and swept his gaze over him, then shook his head slowly at the younger man's obviously uncomfortable stance. "Damn it, Van, go somewhere and lay down," he breathed in frustration and concern. "Hurts me just to look at you." Tanner lifted his chin stubbornly. "Ain't nobody asking you to look." Chris raised his hands in a gesture of surrender, not wanting to have this fight again. All right," he said quietly. "I won't pester you, but you can't blame me for just wanting to make sure you're all right." Finn exhaled heavily and relaxed, his anger fading. "Reckon not," he agreed softly, no longer bothering to hide his pain. "It's just, hell, I don't know," he breathed tiredly. Larrabee nodded, understanding perfectly what Tanner couldn't put into words. "It's something to get used to," he said quietly. "Don't figure you've had too many folks fretting over you. It's something new." He shrugged lightly. "I guess we've all had some adjustments to make, but I think we're doing all right." A slight smile curved about his wide mouth. "Ain't none of us killed each other yet." Finn stared intently at the older man, his blue eyes dark with feeling. "Don't want you thinking I ain't grateful," he rasped softly. "I'm sorry for giving you and Nathan so much grief earlier. I know y'all's just worried." A faint trace of his familiar lopsided grin curved about his mouth. "Reckon my manners is as bad as pesos." Chris chuckled. "You do bear a striking resemblance to each other, especially round the head." Finn scowled and jerked his chin up again. "You ain't got no call to insult me, Larrabee," he declared. "I ain't so beat up that I can't kick your sorry ass, you know." Chris laughed aloud at the very notion. "Shit, Tanner, you couldn't take on Casey Wells right now, and you know it. And the way you look, you got no right calling anybody else sorry. Hell," his green eyes gleaming with laughter raked over the tracker's badly bruised figure, "that Texas Trail boss who died of gangrene didn't look as bad as you." "Awful damn funny for a gunfighter, ain't you?" Vin growled, though humor glinted in his blue eyes. "Reckon if I didn't hurt so much, I'd be rolling on the ground laughing my ass off. Ha, ha, ha." Larrabee shook his head. "Nope. I was wrong," he said with a grin. "You're worse than Peso. At least he knows when to shut up. Now come on, Nettie's looking for you. She's determined to feed you. Get you some meat on them scrawny bones." Ben was instantly defensive, and his blue eyes narrowed. "Where's she taking me?" he asked warily. "I ain't going to no goddamn restaurant where I gotta take a bath and change clothes." "Easy, pard," Chris soothed, well familiar with his friend's intense dislike of such fancy places. "She mentioned something about the widow's kitchen. You know, Miss Calhoun's little place. It's real nice, real comfortable. I've been there myself a few times, and ain't nobody complained yet about the way I dress." Vin thought for several moments, then relaxed. "Well, I reckon that'd be all right, then," he drawled. "After all," mischief flared in his eyes as he grinned insolently at the gunfighter, "can't be too fancy if they let the bad element in." "The bad element in?" Larrabee scowled fiercely at the tracker. He wasn't sure how Vin had heard about that description of himself to marry Travis, but he was certain the man would never let him live it down, just as he'd never stop calling him cowboy. "Goddamn mouthy Texan," he growls, fixing his sharpest, hottest glare upon the tracker. "Gonna shoot you yet." Any other man would have cringed and slunk away before that glare. Tanner only smirked. "Sure, cowboy," he snorted, limping past his friend and shaking his head. "And one day pigs will grow feathers and fly." Chris followed after Vin, still scowling. One day he was going to scare Tanner into the proper submission if it killed them both. Two men watched from the shadows between buildings as Larrabee and Tanner emerged from the livery. Both noted the tracker's stiff, painful movements and the way Larrabee shortened and slowed his stride for his friend's sake. Smiles slowly broke out over two faces. "See there, Hank? It's just like they said in the saloon," the smaller one said with enormous satisfaction. "That damn tracker can't hardly walk, much less ride." He nodded, still grinning. "Hell, I reckon we ain't got to worry none about him coming after us no more." The taller man's smile gave way to a thoughtful frown. "I don't know, Lem," he said slowly. "He's an awful determined cuss. Them fellers said as much themselves. I can't see him backing down just 'cause he's bruised up a mite." Lem's smile turned feral. "Well, then I reckon we'll just have to make sure, won't we?" He nodded toward the livery. "That kid sheriff said their tracker won't ride if and his horse can't carry him." Hank's face flooded with consternation. "Now hold on, Lem," he said sharply, reaching out to grab the smaller man's arm. "I ain't going to do nothing to that horse. I ain't never hurt a horse on purpose in my life, and I sure as hell ain't about to start now." He scowled. "I reckon it'd be better if we just finished what we started and killed that damn tracker." Lem exhaled sharply and shook his head. "You're a goddamn fool, Hank, you know that? Kill the tracker. How the hell are we going to kill the damn tracker without them other six cutting us up and using us for bait, huh?" Hank thought a minute, then nodded. "We could stab him. That's nice and quiet." Lem swept a mocking gaze over his partner, then himself. "Using what? You got a knife?" Hank swallowed hard. "Got me a pocket knife," he said softly. Lem snorted contemptuously. "Oh, yeah, I can see him being all still and quiet whilst you carve away on him with your pocket knife. I mean a real knife, goddammit." Hank swallowed again. He was beginning to see why Lem did all their thinking. "Nope." "Me neither." The smaller man returned his gaze to the distant figures of Larrabee and Tanner. "'Sides, if and we did kill that tracker, them other six would never let us get away. And if they didn't kill us, Roy surely would for bringing him down on us all." "Nope," he shook his head. "We just got to make sure he can't come after us. He's the only tracker in the bunch. Without him, them others will never find us." "I ain't hurtin' no horse," Hank maintained stubbornly, "especially that one." He smiled slightly. "He's awful purty and spirited. I love a spirited horse." Lem jerked his gaze back to his partner, another smile spreading over his unshaved face. "Like him, do you?" he asked thoughtfully. Hank heaved a besotted sigh, his close-set eyes glowing as he remembered the way the horse had handled the steep trail and sharp rocks and Cutter's Pass before he'd shot the tracker out of the saddle. That animal had damn near danced over the treacherous ground. "Oh, yeah," he murmured, "I ain't seen his like before." Lem's smile grew as an idea dawned. "Maybe that's it, then," he mused. "After all, a tracker can't track if he's left a foot." Nettie had known supper with Vin would be a quiet affair. Anyone who expected conversation from the tracker might as well expect him to sing and dance, too. What she hadn't anticipated, though, and didn't like at all, was the grim, stoic silence in which he ate, and the unfamiliar distance between them that made him about as companionable as a stone. He'd closed himself up tight, withdrawn to that place deep inside himself that no one could reach, and she, by Jove, wasn't going to tolerate it. Not from her boy. "So was it Chris or Nathan that cut out your tongue?" He looked up sharply at that stern tone, blue eyes wide and startled. His hand hovered motionless over the steak he'd been absently stabbing with his fork, and he held himself as still as a deer scenting a cougar and preparing to bolt. She saw that weary look come over him and sighed, shaking her gray head slowly as her anger faded. "Land sakes, son," she murmured sadly. "Don't you know by now you ain't got nothing to fear from me?" He frowned and bowed his head, stung by guilt. "Hell, Nettie, I ain't—" He broke off abruptly, and color flooded his face. "Sorry," he breathed, ducking his head lower, ashamed to meet her gaze. "Don't mean to keep cussing in front of you." He sighed and put down his fork. "Reckon I just ain't fit company for decent folks," he said tiredly. She leaned across the table and snared his strong wrist with her calloused fingers, gripping it firmly. "Look at me, son," she urged quietly. "Come on, Vin, look at me." After a few moments, the blue eyes lifted to meet hers, and she smiled gently at the little lost boy she saw in them. "First of all, son, I thank you for counting me as decent folks. Means a lot, knowing you hold me in so high in your mind. And second of all, if you ever tell me you ain't fit for company for me again, I will take that strap to you." She arched a gray brow. "Ain't nothing wrong with you, Vin," she assured him. "Maybe you're some rough around the edges, and I reckon you're as tough as sun-dried leather, but there ain't a thing in the world wrong with what's inside you. You're as much decent folk as anybody I ever met, and anybody who says otherwise can go straight to hell." She winked at his startled expression. "Pardon my language." He chuckled quietly and shook his head, warmed as always by the deep affection, the love he saw in those fierce, sharp eyes. "Reckon you're some tough, too," he drawled. She lifted her head and raised that brow. "You better believe I am, son. Tough enough to take on mule, stubborn, closed-mouthed, hard-headed Texan any day of the week." "So," she released his wrist and sat back, crossing her arms against her chest. "You gonna tell me why you're so quiet?" He bowed his head again and scowled, then picked up his biscuit and began shredding it between long, strong fingers. He didn't speak right away. He seldom spoke right away, but turned over his thoughts in his mind and carefully matched them up with the words he would need to give them shape. Nettie let him think, knowing it was his way. She never once rushed him and wouldn't start now. She didn't always have much patience with others, but with Vin Tanner, she had endless store. And when at last she saw his familiar little nod, she knew he was ready. "Chris and Nathan say I can't ride for a week." She knew there was more, and was content to wait for it. He sensed that and was grateful. He'd never been one for words, wasn't comfortable with them, and moved as gingerly around them as he would a sleeping bear. "Thing is, if I can't ride, I can't track." He raised his head and lifted his eyes to hers, his bruised face set along sober lines. "Them horse thieves need finding, Nettie. Ain't sure the boys can do it without me." He frowned and shook his head slowly. "I'd surely hate to see any more folks get their stock took 'cause of me." She smiled slightly at that. The boy had a sense of responsibility that went bone deep, and a sense of justice that went even deeper. For someone who'd spent so little of his life among folks, he took his obligations to treat them as seriously as anyone she'd ever known. It was, she realized, a measure of just how much he felt the folks in this town had given him, and how much he felt he owed to them in return. "If any more stock is stolen," she told him, "it won't be your fault, son. It'll be the fault of them stealing it, and them alone. I don't imagine anybody around here would hold you responsible." She smiled slightly. "Except you." Her smile faded. "You're hurt, Vin. Everybody knows that. Time you admitted it as well." He scowled, and his eyes flashed. "Ain't hurt," he insisted stubbornly. "Just bruised up a mite is all. Ain't been shot, ain't been stabbed." "You got a bullet crease in your head," she reminded him primly. "I call that being shot." "Ah, hell, Nettie, that ain't being shot," he snorted. Shot is when Nathan has to pull the bullet out of you with them damn tools of his, and when you're bleeding all over his clinic. Hell, I've cut myself worse than this shaving." "Then maybe you need more practice," she retorted. "Shot is shot, boy, and you've been shot, and thrown down a mountain to boot, so—" "Wasn't no mountain," he grumbled. "Was just a ravine, and I landed wrong is all." "Mule stubborn," she said again, a touch of heat in her voice and eyes. "I swear, Vin Tanner, a man could empty his gun into you, gut you with a knife, and then step on you, and your last words on this earth would be, 'I'm fine.'" "You look at me, boy, and you tell me true," she ordered fiercely. "You hurtin' right now?" He stared at her in alarm, eyes wide, mouth half open. He He couldn't lie to her if he tried, and if he did try, she'd know it in a heartbeat. There were two people on earth who could read him like other folks read writing. He'd already pissed Chris off pretty good today, and he wasn't sure he was up to having Nettie pissed at him, too. Still, he tried to convince himself that he wasn't in pain, so he wouldn't have to lie, but it was no use. His head hadn't stopped hurting since he'd woken up at the bottom of that ravine, and his ribs were aching fit to kill him. His lower back was in agony, and his hip and knee were throbbing something fierce. Hell, right now he'd be almost grateful for some of that brew of Nathan's that tasted so foul but did wondrous things for a man's aches. She saw his answer in his eyes and gave an impatient sigh. "Land's sake, son," she breathed with the tenderness so few others ever saw in her. "What am I going to do with you?" She leaned across the table again and took his hand, holding firmly to it and sneering his gaze with hers. "Chris and Nathan are right," she said firmly. "You got no business riding, thieves or no thieves. Fact is, you probably should be in bed right now, hurting like you are. And don't tell me I'm wrong," she added quickly as he opened his mouth to protest. "These eyes may be old, but they can still see clear." Smiling gently, she patted his hand and released it. "If nothing else, do this for me," she asked. "Out of respect for an old woman's feelings, go up to your room. Not that damn wagon, but up to that room you don't ever use, and lay yourself down in a real bed." He swallowed hard, not yet willing to concede that her concern was warranted. "Beds is for sick folk," he said softly. "I ain't sick." She sighed sharply and frowned, exasperated by his stubbornness. "I ain't going to argue with you, son, but I will say it'd do my heart good to see you taking care of yourself for once." She arched an iron-gray brow at him, and the ferocity returned to her eyes. "You ain't going to make me stay awake all night fretting over you, are you? Frail old woman like me needs her sleep, and my weak old heart don't need the strain of worrying." Light flickered in his eyes, and the familiar shy boyish grin lifted the corners of his mouth. "You got the strongest heart of anybody I ever knowed, Nettie, and you're no more a frail old woman than I am." He winked. "Anybody who doubts it can just ask Guy Royal." She snorted derisively. "Guy Royal? I have seen toothless old dogs with more bite than him." "Now," she leaned across the table and grabbed his wrist once more, peering compellingly into his eyes. "You stop changing the subject, son, and you heed what I say. I want you to give me your word that you'll do as I ask, that you'll spend tonight in a real bed, and that you'll go up now and get the rest you need." Her fingers tightened about him, and that gray brow shot up again. "And I ain't letting you go till I get what I want." His smile gave way to a frown, and irritation clouded his blue eyes. "You too?" he asked softly. "Don't know why y'all can't just leave me be." "Because we care about you, son," she informed him firmly. "Because we know you're hurting, even though you're too mule stubborn to admit it, and we want to see you taken care of." Her voice and eyes softened. "There's no shame in being hurt, son, but there's a powerful lot of stupidity in being too proud to admit it when you are. And you're a lot of things, Van Tanner, but you ain't ever been stupid." He gave a wry grin. "I don't reckon Chris would agree with that." Her eyes gleamed and her lips twitched in a knowing smile. "Probably not out loud, no, but he knows it in his heart. Now." She looked up and waved young Dora Calhoun over. "I'm going to have your supper wrapped up for you to take with you, and I want you to eat every bite of it, too. Get some meat on them bones of yours. Then when it's gone, I want you to lay down in the bed, not on the floor, and get some rest." She smiled at him. "You do that for me?" He had to smile at that, the slow, shy grin that eased the weariness from his eyes and the age that had nothing to do with years from his face. "Reckon I got no choice when you put it like that," he said softly. He reached for her hand and folded it within his own, curling long, callous fingers about hers, while blue eyes filled with light and love rested on her seamed, weathered face. "Hell, Nettie, you know I'd do anything for you." Her head came up at that, and warmth flooded her tough old soul at the deep, unashamed affection in his voice. "I know you would, son," she murmured, pitching her voice so only he could hear it, "and I love you for it." As nothing else could have, those words sealed it for him. For no other reason than that Nettie had asked, Vin Tanner would spend the night within walls, in a bed. Chris and Buck walked at a leisurely pace along the boardwalk, enjoying an interlude of peace. The fiery red blaze of sunset had given way at last to the muted violet of twilight, and the town rested in that brief lull between the busy bustle of day and the raucous clamor of night. With decent folk getting settled in for the night, and the not-so-decent having yet to emerge from their holes, the darkening streets were practically deserted, and the peacekeepers could catch their breath before going on the alert for trouble. "I told Vin I'd be taking his patrol tonight," Buck said, tipping his hat and smiling broadly at Miss Annabel Heath and her mother. A fine-looking woman in her own right went past. Boy nearly split a gut at the thought of somebody else doing his work for him. He chuckled and shook his head. "Hell, I thought for a minute there he was going to go ahead and saddle up Paystone right out just to see what you'd do." Larrabee scowled in exasperation. "I'd have shot his sorry ass out of the saddle, just like I told him. Shit," he seemed. "I never seen such a hard-headed, mule stubborn, infuriating son of a bitch in all my life." Buck laughed aloud. "Well then, old pard," he answered, slapping a big hand to Larrabee's shoulder, "you might try looking a little closer to the mirror the next time you shave." Chris's scowl deepened, but his green eyes gleamed with humor. As Buck laughed again, Chris had to chuckle. Wilmington's good humor was as contagious as a cold. "You two are in a good mood," called a familiar voice from down the boardwalk. Nathan Jackson met his friends and stopped, a small bag in one hand. "What ain't to be happy about on a lovely night like this?" Buck asked, spreading his arms wide to encompass the town. "Seen a few lovely ladies, gonna see a few more in the saloon, and ain't nobody shooting at me. A man can't ask for more from life than that." He noted the small bag Jackson was holding and nodded toward it. "Somebody sick?" The healer snorted. "You mean other than in the head?" Chris recognized the man's tone and gave a small, knowing grin. "Going to see Vin, are you?" "Yep," Nathan shook his head in wonderment. "Don't ask me how she did it, but Nettie convinced him to sleep in his room, in his bed, instead of that damn wagon. Then got him to let me fix him something that'll ease the pain and let him sleep." He shook his head again, still smiling. "Sho would like to know her secret." "You ever tried threatening him with lye soap and a strap?" Chris asked. "Seems to work for her." Nathan snorted. "That's only 'cause he won't shoot her." Chris nodded, grinning slightly. "Reckon you're right." He reached into his coat pocket for a cheroot. "Gonna give him some laudanum?" Nathan shook his head and frowned, his expression growing serious. "He won't take it, and you know it," he answered quietly. "Not unless he's hurting so bad he can't stand it. Says it makes him sleep too deep." Chris hesitated a moment before lighting the cheroot, his eyes meeting Nathan's, then nodded and lit the cigar. He understood all too well why Vin couldn't afford to let himself sleep too deep, knew what it was the tracker feared. And it bothered Chris more than he could say that his friend had to live with such a fear. "Just remind him that I'm right next door," he told Nathan quietly, "and tell him not to worry, that I'll sleep light enough for both of us." "I'll tell him," Nathan assured the gunman, figuring that the knowledge would do more to help the tracker rest than any draft he could give him. "I know it'll make him feel a lot easier," he smiled. "Best be going, then." He glanced past the two toward the boarding house. "Don't pay to keep Nettie waiting when Vin's ailing." Chris watched him walk away and silently vowed to thank Nettie Wells for talking or forcing sense into Tanner when no one else could. Buck's quiet chuckle broke into his thoughts. "What?" Buck's teeth flashed white in the deepening darkness. "They're a pair, ain't they? Nettie and Vin, I mean. Anybody else tried fussing over him like she's done, and he'd throw 'em out on their ass and fill 'em full of lead. But not her. Hell, he let her take him to a restaurant, for God's sake. And now she's got him sleeping in a bed, and letting Nathan dose him." His grin widened, and he nudged Chris with an elbow. "It's like I've been telling you, pard. Women are truly God's greatest wonders." The story is continued in Chapter 3.